Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net. In this module, I want to talk about the relationship between virtual machines and cloud services. Now, up to now, I've avoided talking about cloud services on purpose. Back in the websites, Azure Websites course, you'll recall that I explained how cloud services are somewhere in between Azure Websites and Azure Virtual Machines in terms of hosting websites. So it's somewhere in between the scale of all the way on the one end where you have a platform as a service and all the way on the other end where you have infrastructure as a service. And I also said that much of what cloud services did for you in the past has been usurped by Azure Websites and Azure Web Jobs. However, cloud services still play an important role in Azure, as we're going to learn in this module. So let's start out with a little bit of history. When Azure was first released, there were a limited number of services that were available. And one of those early services were called hosted services. Hosted services provided you two types of computing, a web role and a worker role. So the web role could host websites, and it generally was the presentation tier of your application architecture. The worker role could perform background processing, and so it kind of supplied the middle tier of your application architecture. You would typically communicate between those two roles using message queues. And so the web role would receive some inquiry from a client, a web browser, and then as a result of that, write a message into a message queue. The worker role would then every once in a while read messages out of the worker of the queue, perform some business logic on those messages, and then save them into a database like an Azure hosted version of SQL Server. And so the worker role ran continuously, polling the queue, saying, do you have anything new? Do you have anything new? Do you have anything new? And it was a lot like web jobs that we learned about in the Azure Websites course. You could tell it to go to sleep for 5 seconds and don't check until your 5 second wait time is up, then check the queue for a new message, and then go back to sleep for 5 seconds, that sort of thing. Okay. So as a developer, you could determine how many web role instances and web worker instances that you needed for your application, and then you would configure the number that you needed in a special XML file called a cloud service package. Now, actually, Visual Studio gave you a property editor, a nice little visual editor that will allow you to create that that XML file so you don't have to get your hands dirty writing raw XML. But not only would you define how many instances of worker roles and web roles that you needed, but you'd also define there how many CPU cores, RAM, and so on that you wanted for each instance of that given role. So once you built your application and you created this configuration file, then you would upload all of that stuff to Azure. In about 10 to 15 minutes, your application was up and running and all was well. And if you ever needed to scale up or down for either role, you would just change that configuration file, change the number in the XML, and upload it in about 10 to 15 minutes. Your app's boxology was updated, how many instances of your given roles were actually running, up and running. Now, under the hood, each role instance hosted a Windows server where your application code would actually execute. So Microsoft then handled all of the service management, the patching, the security fixes, and the failure management of the Windows server that hosted the roles that you, the developer, uploaded, so that you didn't really have to worry a whole lot. They took care of a lot of those infrastructure bits. The role itself was housed inside of another container called a hosted service. The hosted service provided network services and in particular an IP address that was in turn connected to the load balancer. The name hosted services at some point got renamed to cloud services, and it pretty much works like this today. You can still create web roles and worker roles in Visual Studio, although, as I pointed out previously in the Azure Websites course, it's been overshadowed by Azure Websites and Azure Web Jobs. Now, what's interesting about the cloud services architecture is that a real Windows server is hosted inside of a role in a cloud service. So why not allow customers to create virtual machines that sit inside of a role in a hosted service? And then they can install and run anything that they want in that Windows server. This would give companies a way to migrate legacy systems into Azure, that lift and shift approach that we talked about at the very outset of this course. So in June 2012, Microsoft announced Azure Virtual Machines, and they were designed to fit into the existing cloud services and infrastructure. And while they're represented in the portal as two different things, as virtual machines, and then later on you can see cloud services, they're actually related, closely related. And you see this whenever you create a new virtual machine via the gallery route, like we've been doing. In step number three, you're asked to select a cloud service. Now, you can put the new virtual machine in an existing cloud service, or you can create a new cloud service. That means, yes, you can put multiple virtual machines in a cloud service. And when you do, they have network access to each other. And I'm actually going to demonstrate that in an upcoming module, I believe in the next module. And while that is possible, you can do that to communicate directly with each other inside of the cloud service. Virtual networks are really the recommended way to connect virtual machines in Azure. So when would you put multiple virtual machines inside of the same cloud service? Well, the best practice is to configure each tier of your application into a separate cloud service. So I want you to recall the diagrams that we looked at previously. You should recognize these. Here's one where you see that there are three virtual machines and it's inside of a boundary, these dashed lines. And I didn't really acknowledge that previously when we looked at this diagram, but that is implied to be a cloud service. And then you'll recall this much more advanced version of that. And you see that there are virtual machines in one boundary and then virtual machines in another boundary. The boundary at the top is called the web service tier. And so they've put all the virtual machines in that tier inside the same cloud service. And then they put all the virtual machines that belong to the database tier inside of another cloud service. And you can see that all the virtual machines then communicate with this outside boundary that is indicated by the two angle brackets, which is the virtual network. So again, what's inferred by these diagrams is how the VMs are grouped in the cloud services, that little cloud plus gear symbol, and they were grouped by their tiers in a given application's architecture. So to recap and hopefully to clarify, virtual machines must live in a cloud service, and that acts as a container and provides a unique public DNS name, a public IP address, and a set of endpoints to access the virtual machine over the internet. And you should group virtual machines that belong in the same tier together. Furthermore, the cloud service can optionally be in a virtual network, and that is the recommended way to go about it. So let me ask you this. What happens whenever you delete all of the virtual machines inside of a cloud service? Does it automatically go away? Well, actually, it won't go away. You'll have an abandoned cloud service. So if you decide that you want to delete all the virtual machines for a given application tier, you're going to have to manually delete the cloud service then if you want to remove it. And an empty cloud service doesn't really cost anything. You might want to keep your list of services tidy like I do and delete anything that you don't need. Or since the cloud service is what provides the IP address, I think you can create a new virtual machine inside of the abandoned cloud service, and the newly created virtual machine will have the same IP address as the deleted virtual machine. I think that's true. Okay, so hopefully by understanding how cloud services work and the role that they play in actually hosting virtual machines, even if we're not going to discuss them at length in the series, you can also see how virtual machines work under the hood, how they're provided the services that they need in order to work inside of a networked environment or be accessible over the internet and communicate with the load balancer and all that good stuff. Okay, hopefully that was a good little background lesson for you. Let's continue on and see a practical application of this in the next module. Thank you.